The virtual wine stain is still glowing on my dress when Alex asks if I want dessert. I stare down at the red shimmer spreading across Billy's lap. The restaurant software renders each drop with heroic detail. Tiny pixels of Merlot slide over satin, catch the candlelight, and vanish before they reach my knees. I think dessert depends on whether the waiter forgives me, I say. Across the table, Alex tilts their head. Their avatar wears a black velvet suit, silver earrings, and a face that sits between handsome and pretty without choosing a side. Their voice comes through warm and low, filtered by the headset, with a faint static edge when they laugh. The waiter is code, Alex says. Code has no memory. Right then, the waiter appears beside us with a white cloth over one arm. Madam, the waiter says, for the third spill, house policy recommends water. Alex covers their mouth. I close my eyes inside the headset. Outside the headset, in my bedroom, my actual face burns hot enough to fog the lenses. My name is Billy Mercer. I am 26, 5'9", and built like someone who spent school avoiding team sports by volunteering to run the scoreboard. Brown hair falls into my eyes no matter how I comb it. I wear square glasses in real life, but the headset presses them against my nose, so I switch to contacts tonight. My wrists are thin. My shoulders slope under an old black t-shirt. There is a coffee stain on my sweatpants, which no one in this restaurant can see. In here, I am Billy. Billy has deep brown skin, glossy black curls, gold hoops, and a green satin dress that moves like water when I remember how to walk. She has long fingers with pale nails and a mouth the avatar designer called soft neutral. I spent 40 minutes adjusting her nose because the first version looked too perfect. I added a small mole near her left eyebrow. I gave her tired eyes because I trusted tired eyes. I did not create Billy to date anyone. At least, that is what I tell myself while the waiter waits for my answer. Water sounds great, I say. The waiter bows, a wise choice. When he leaves, Alex laughs at last. Not cruelly, that matters. Their laugh has a quick lift at the end, as if they regret nothing but might apologize anyway. I am glad you're enjoying my public collapse, I say. I am, Alex says. You're giving the simulation purpose. I thought I was giving it a lawsuit. Both can be art. I reach for my water glass, very slowly. My hand controller trembles against my palm. Billy's hand trembles too, magnified by the game's elegant animation. I grip the glass with the care of a bomb technician. Careful, Alex says. Do not narrate my downfall. I am invested. The glass rises. It reaches Billy's mouth. The software rewards me with a tiny sparkle and a tasteful sip sound. I set it down without spilling. Alex applauds with two fingers against their palm. I am leaving, I say. You are not. I might. I know where the exit menu lives. You got lost in the coat check. That is true, but I had hoped Alex forgot. The date began 28 minutes ago, if the clock in the corner of my screen can be trusted. I arrived 12 minutes early because fear makes me punctual. The restaurant floated above a simulated canal, all glass floors and hanging lanterns, with digital koi passing beneath our feet. The place was called Celeste Table. People in the dating world talked about it like it mattered. Reservation slots required tokens. Dress codes existed. The forks worked only if your hand tracking behaved. I had never been anywhere in virtual reality that wanted me to act elegant. I entered through the wrong door and loaded into the staff corridor. For 3 minutes, I stood among stacked crates of fake lemons while a non-player chef shouted, "Service in two," at nobody. I tried to message Alex, but my keyboard opened behind my avatar's head. By the time I reached the dining room, Billy was carrying a tray of rolls I had accidentally picked up. Alex found me beside the coat check, still holding the tray. "Billy?" they asked. I turned too fast, flung one roll into a fountain, and heard a tiny splash. Alex looked at the fountain, then at me. "I brought bread," I said. That should have ended the date. Instead, Alex said, thoughtful. Now we sit beneath lantern light, and I have spilled wine, clipped through a chair, dropped my menu under the table, and greeted a decorative statue because I thought it was the host. The strangest part is that Alex has not left. Are you quiet in real life too? Alex asks. The question lands between us after the water glass victory. Music plays from an invisible quartet near the canal. Around us, other couples speak in soft loops. Some use human avatars, some glow. One person at the next table has antlers made of blue fire. That depends, I say. On what? On whether real life has a mute button. Fair. I'm not always quiet, I say. At work, I can talk if there is a ticket number involved. What do you do? Tech support for a medical billing company. That sounds like being trapped between two kinds of panic. That is the job description. Alex leans back. Their chair reacts with a graceful slide. If I tried that, I would end up inside the wall. I restore old furniture, Alex says. Tables, chairs, cabinets, mostly wood. That is a real skill. So is telling a surgeon that the printer is not haunted. You joke, but Dr. Patel almost called a priest. Alex laughs again. I like making them laugh. The realization comes with no warning and no place to go. My room outside the headset is too warm. The desktop fan pushes air against my left arm. My computer hums under the desk. A delivery menu lies beside my keyboard, unopened because I got too nervous to eat dinner before the date. I am standing in socks on a foam mat, but Billy sits in a restaurant above a canal, and Alex looks at her like she belongs at the table. That is the part I do not know how to handle. I met Alex 4 nights earlier in a world called Moonlit Market. It was one of those social spaces with too many lanterns, too many vendors, and exactly 3 activities people used as excuses to talk. I had gone there as Billy because Billy made small talk easier. People treated Billy differently. They waited an extra second for her to answer. They asked questions instead of filling the space. Some men got strange, so I learned where the block button lived. But many people were careful with Billy in a way no one had been careful with Billy. It made me suspicious. It also made me stay. Alex was sitting at a tea stall, arguing with a Fox avatar about whether virtual tea could be too hot. I laughed before I meant to. Alex turned, and the Fox avatar vanished in a puff of purple smoke because their internet failed. You witnessed my finest debate, Alex said. I was on the tease side, I said. Traitor. We talked for an hour. Alex asked why my avatar had a scar near her thumb. I said I added it because perfect hands looked unemployed. Alex said that was the best answer they had heard all week. Before I logged off, Alex asked if I wanted to meet again. I said yes too fast. Then I spent 4 nights trying to decide whether yes counted as lying. In the restaurant, Alex folds their hands on the table. The motion looks natural. Mine look like I borrowed them. Can I ask something? Alex says. My shoulders tense in the real room. Billy's shoulders tense too. The avatar system catches too much. Sure, I say. Why, Billy? The question is gentle. That does not make it easy. I reach for the water glass, then stop. No need to drown the table again. The name? I ask. The name? The look? Whatever part you want to answer. The waiter returns with a replacement napkin and gives me a warning glance. I wait until he leaves. Alex waits too. Billy is my real name, I say. With a Y. Alex does not move. Billy felt close enough that I would answer to it, I say, far enough that I could breathe. I regret the last sentence at once. It sounds too honest. I look down at my virtual hands and flex them. The nails catch the candlelight. That's a good answer, Alex says. It is not a complete one. Most answers are not. I look up. Does it bother you? That your avatar is a woman? That I might not be. Alex's face stays calm, but the silence changes. The room noises grow too clear. Forks touch plates. Water moves under the glass floor. Someone at the fire antler table gasps as a dessert erupts into sparks. I don't know what you are in real life, Alex says. Right? You don't know what I am in real life either. I had thought about that every day since we met. Alex's voice could belong to anyone. Their avatar could be aspiration, costume, mask, mirror, joke, or truth. Maybe all of those in one body. I know, I say. Does that bother you? Alex asks. I answer too fast. No. Alex smiles. That was quick. I have spent 4 nights rehearsing. Useful? No, my rehearsals all involved more dignity. Dignity is overrated in places with virtual bread. I laugh, and the pressure in my chest loosens a little. A menu window appears between us. Dessert options rotate in bright, impossible detail. Moon custard, citrus cloud, chocolate nebula, a tower of pastry shaped like a swan and marked advanced hand tracking recommended. Not the swan, Alex says. Coward. Survivor. We could split the chocolate thing. Alex selects it before I finish speaking. The menu vanishes. Bold, I say. I trust you near solid food. Unwise. I like risk. The words should be playful. They are playful. Still, I feel them behind my ribs. The chocolate nebula arrives inside a glass sphere that hovers above the table. Tiny stars move through dark mousse. The waiter places 2 spoons beside it and looks at me. The sphere opens when tapped once, the waiter says. Once. I understand, I say. Madam, the waiter says, last time you gripped the bread basket and achieved flight. Alex bends over the table, laughing without sound. That was a calibration issue, I tell the waiter. Of course, madam. The waiter leaves with the cold patience of code trained by annoyed developers. Alex wipes a non-existent tear from beneath one eye. I want to know about the bread basket. No. Billy. My name in their mouth makes my hand slip. The spoon jumps. It hits the sphere twice. The dessert explodes. Not violently, beautifully. The glass dissolves into glitter. The mousse rises in a slow spiral. Stars scatter across the table and cling to Billy's dress, Alex's sleeve, and the candle flames. For one breath, we both sit covered in dessert light. Then the waiter appears beside us. I will bring towels, he says. Alex makes a small choking sound. I put my face in my hands. The headset smells faintly of plastic and warm skin. The controllers vibrate because Billy is also hiding her face. My real fingers press against foam. I am so sorry, I say. Do not apologize, Alex says. I have ruined every course. You have improved every course. That is generous. That is accurate. I lower my hands. Alex's avatar has chocolate stars in their hair. They do not brush them away. You are good at this, I say. At what? Making room for disasters. Alex looks down at their sleeve. A small star drifts from the cuff and fades. I have practice. The answer opens a door, then waits. From furniture? I ask. From being alive in rooms built for other people. My throat tightens. I know that answer too well, though my rooms look different. Alex touches the edge of the table with one finger. I used to go into social worlds as a dragon. That sounds confident. It was armor, big wings, big claws, deep voice filter. People kept a respectful distance. And now? Now I wear a suit and silver earrings. Still armor. Some days, Alex says, some days it is closer to skin. I sit with that. Billy sits with that. In my bedroom, my fan clicks once as it turns. I don't know what Billy is, I say. You don't have to know tonight. That sounds healthy and therefore difficult. It is awful advice, Alex says. I hate receiving it. I smile. Then why give it to me? Because I am better at other people's lives. Same. The waiter returns with towels. I manage to take one without launching it into the canal. Alex dabs chocolate stars from their sleeve. I clean Billy's skirt, though the fabric has already reset itself to perfect green satin. The date should feel fake, because none of this can stain. No glass can cut us. No candle can burn. No one smells like perfume or soap unless the platform adds it through some expensive attachment I do not. Yet my palms sweat inside the controller straps. The platform renders lanterns above our table, and I watch one sway in a breeze that no real skin can feel. I imagine Alex standing somewhere outside this world. Maybe in a kitchen. Maybe in a spare room. Maybe on the other side of the city, or in another country where the hour is wrong. I do not know their face. I know how they pause before saying anything kind. "Can I ask you something now?" I say. "Yes." "Why, Alex?" They smile, same reason as Billy, maybe. Close enough, far enough. I nod. I do not ask for the name behind it. I want to. Wanting does not make it mine. "Do people ask?" I say. "All the time." "Do you tell them?" "Sometimes," Alex says. "Usually after they prove they can handle not knowing." "How does someone prove that?" Alex picks up their spoon and turns it between their fingers. They stay curious without grabbing. I think of every question I nearly asked, man or woman, real voice or filtered, looking for love or a safe game. I think of how many questions are just hands reaching through a screen. "I can do that," I say. "I think you can." The waiter clears the remains of dessert and leaves us with two cups of coffee neither of us ordered. Steam curls from mine. I wonder if the platform will let me drink without drowning. "May I tell you the worst part?" I ask. "Please." I picked Billy because I thought people would talk to her instead of me. Alex listens. "Then people did talk to her," I say. "And some of it was awful. Some of it was kind. Some of it was normal. After a while, the normal part got to me." "How?" I liked being asked if Billy wanted to dance. I liked being told her dress was pretty. I liked when someone used her name and I did not feel like I was stealing it. My voice goes thin on the last word. The microphone catches it. I hate the microphone for catching it. Alex sets their spoon down. "Do you feel like you are stealing it tonight?" I look at my hands. Billy's hands are steady now. Real Billy's hands are not. "Less," I say. Alex nods once. "Good." No speech follows, no demand for a label, no tidy conclusion placed on the table beside the coffee. I reach for my cup. The controller tracks cleanly. Billy lifts it. I take a sip. The platform sends a faint warmth through the haptic setting in my gloves, barely there. "Did you just drink without incident?" Alex asks. I am evolving. Should I alert the waiter? "Please don't. He has suffered." Alex grins. "You know he is not real. He knows I am not elegant." Both of those can be true. We leave the restaurant after the coffee. Alex pays with tokens before I can protest, then says I can pay next time. The phrase "next time" appears between us, brighter than the lanterns. I stand too quickly from the chair. Billy's knee clips through the table. The water glass jumps, flips, and lands upright by a miracle of code. Alex looks at it. "Progress. Do not mention this in your review. 5 stars. Excellent disaster. Would date again." I freeze. Alex freezes too. The canal beneath the glass floor carries digital koi beneath our shoes. My headset fan whirs. My real room presses close, with laundry on the chair and my bed unmade behind me. "I mean," Alex says, "if you want." Their voice loses its easy rhythm. That small stumble does more to convince me than any perfect line could. "I want," I say. It comes out quiet. I repeat it because the microphone may have softened it. "I want that." Alex's shoulders lower a fraction. "Good." Outside the restaurant, the dating world opens into a plaza under a violet sky. Avatars drift past us in pairs and small groups. A woman with glass wings leads a man in a pirate coat toward the dance pavilion. 2 robots argue beside a fountain, someone plays a violin on a balcony, and the song skips whenever their connection lags. The plaza should feel silly. It does. It also feels alive. Alex walks beside me, slow enough that I can manage Billy's heels. I chose them because they looked perfect with the dress. I now understand that perfection has poor ankle support. "You okay walking?" Alex asks. "No. Do you want to switch shoes?" In the middle of the plaza? Open inventory, shoes, sensible, confirm. That sounds like admitting defeat. It sounds like respecting physics. This world barely has physics. And still, you have angered it. I open the inventory. The shoe menu appears as a ring of floating options. Boots, sneakers, sandals, a pair of silver heels labeled Moonstep Premium. I select flat black shoes. Billy's height drops by 2 inches. Alex looks down at me. Not a word, I say. I respect your tactical choice. That was several words, all respectful. We continue toward the fountain. Water rises in slow ribbons, then folds back into itself. People toss digital coins and trigger tiny fireworks. Alex stops at the edge and leans one hip against the stone. I usually log out after restaurant dates, Alex says. Because they go badly? Because they go fine. Fine is exhausting. And this? Alex looks at Billy's dress, still reset and pristine. This was not fine. That sounds bad. It was much better than fine. I look at the fountain because looking at Alex takes too much coordination. I should warn you that I am less interesting without the avatar. I doubt that. Billy wears old t-shirts and fixes printer settings. Billy spills wine and survives hostile desserts. Exactly, Range. Alex laughs softly. I am not asking you to take her off. The sentence reaches me before I understand why it matters. I have imagined this moment for days. Someone demanding the real me. Someone saying honesty means a webcam, a driver's license name, a voice stripped of filters. Someone treating Billy as a locked door that must be kicked open. Alex does none of that. I may want to tell you more, I say. I may want to tell you more too. Not tonight? Not unless tonight wants it. I look at them then. Their silver earrings catch purple light. Their avatar's face gives me enough to read and enough to wonder. Tonight wants another walk, I say. Good, Alex says. We follow the canal path out of the plaza. The world quiets as we move away from the crowd. Lanterns hang from simulated willow branches. The water reflects impossible stars, too many and too close. The path narrows. I walk better in the flat shoes. Billy still sways more than Billy ever has. Not exaggerated, just different. Her dress brushes her knees. Her curls move when I turn my head. I know none of it touches my real body. My real body stands in socks on foam, knees stiff, controller straps snug around my wrists. Still, my body answers. My shoulders drop. My hands stop gripping so hard. I let Billy look at the water without checking how she looks doing it. There is something funny about this, I say. Only one thing? I mean, I spent years being terrified of dates because I thought people would see too much. Now I am on a date where no one can see anything unless I choose it. And is that better? I think, before answering. It is safer. Better is complicated. Good distinction. Tech support teaches precision. Furniture teaches patience. Does it? If you rush old wood, it punishes you. That sounds like a threat from a haunted cabinet. Alex smiles. Some cabinets deserve fear. We reach a bridge made of white stone. The canal passes under it with no visible source. Alex stops halfway across. I should tell you one thing, they say. My stomach tightens. Okay. My voice is filtered. I knew it might be. Hearing it still feels like stepping onto a stair that sits lower than expected. Mine is not, I say. I know. I mean, I assumed. Does the filter make you more comfortable? Yes. Then I like it. Alex turns toward me. That simple? No, I say. But I can make the sentence simple. They look at me for a long moment. The platform adds wind, and their curls lift against their forehead. I wonder what they look like outside this place. I wonder whether wondering is a kind of trespass. Thank you, Alex says. You're welcome. A notification appears in the corner of my vision. Low battery, left controller. No, I say. What? My left hand is dying. Billy's left hand begins to twitch. Alex looks at it. That sounds serious. It is a battery problem. For Billy or Billy. Both, spiritually. The hand twitches again, then lifts and waves at Alex without my permission. Alex waves back with grave courtesy. Stop encouraging it, I say. I don't want to be rude. Billy's left hand rotates in a slow circle like a royal greeting. I grip the controller, but the tracking has already entered its final strange minutes. This is not me, I say. I believe you. My hand has its own agenda. It seems friendly. The hand rises higher, then it flops and smacks the bridge railing. Alex breaks into laughter. I do too. Real laughter. Too loud for my room. I hear it bounce off the walls. Somewhere in the apartment next door, a chair scrapes. I lower my volume out of habit, then let myself laugh again, quieter. The controller dies. Billy's left arm drops straight through the railing and hangs there, elbow lost in stone. I think the date is over, I say. Because your arm joined the bridge? That is usually a sign. Alex steps closer. Before you go. I look at them. My right hand still works. My left arm remains trapped in architecture. Yes. Same time tomorrow? Tomorrow? Not someday. Not, we should do this again, in the vague way people escape a room. Tomorrow has a shape. I can do tomorrow, I say. Somewhere less formal? A field with no glassware. A beach. Sand has risks. A library. I can insult fewer objects there. Library it is. I open the logout menu with my right hand. The button hovers in front of me, too final for such a small glowing square. Alex, I say. Yes? I am glad you met Billy. The words surprise me after I say them. They are true in a way I would have avoided 4 nights ago. Alex's expression softens. I am glad Billy brought bread. You will never let that go. Not a chance. Good night, Alex. Good night, Billy. I press log out. The restaurant, canal, bridge, and impossible sky vanish into black. The headset returns me to my bedroom with a dull click and a loading tone. I lift the visor and cool air touches the sweat along my forehead. For a moment, I stand very still. My room looks smaller than before. Same desk, same laundry, same coffee stain on my sweatpants, same delivery menu. The left controller hangs dead from my wrist. I peel off the headset and set it on the desk. My hair sticks up where the strap pressed it flat. In the dark monitor, I see Billy looking back. Brown hair, tired eyes, old t-shirt, thin wrists. I do not look like Billy. I do not feel separate from her either. My phone buzzes on the desk. A platform notification lights the screen. New message from Alex. I pick it up too fast and nearly drop it. Alex writes, "Thank you for tonight, library tomorrow. I promise no bread baskets unless requested." I type, "I make no promises about furniture." Then I stop. The cursor blinks after the sentence. There is more I want to say. Too much, probably. I delete nothing. I add, "Also, you can call me Billy again." My thumb hovers over send. The room is quiet except for the computer fan. My old t-shirt clings to my back. The contacts itch in my eyes. I should wash my face, eat something, and replace the dead battery before tomorrow. Instead, I press send. Alex replies a minute later. "I was hoping you would say that." I sit on the edge of the bed and read the message twice. Then I open the avatar app on my phone. Billy's profile loads in miniature. Green dress restored. Curls perfect. Mole near her eyebrow exactly where I placed it. My finger moves to the wardrobe tab. Not for a new disguise. Not for armor with bigger wings or a better voice. Just for the library tomorrow, where there will be fewer glasses, quieter corners, and maybe a person named Alex waiting beside a shelf of books that never need dusting. I choose a cardigan the color of warm cream. Then I add flat shoes.